Tonight is Making It Big, Getting Paid for Making a Difference. And tonight's subject is really, have you ever thought about what it would be like to get paid to make a difference for people or a cause that you really care about? And one story about a woman that I've met through my work is a woman named Molly. And she was, when she was a teenager, she started running when she was about 15 years old. And she, as she says, she found herself stuck in the, what she calls the girl box, where only girls who were a certain size with a certain beauty were popular. And girls had to kind of felt like they had to mold their bodies and personalities to fit into the, what all the other girls said. And that really made an impact on her, and the running helped her kind of work through that. And then as she was, you know, an adult, about probably about 15 years ago now, she had an idea. While she kept running, and she was on a long run, and she had an idea that she could combine her training in social work with her passion for running and start a group for adolescent girls to help them deal with kind of body image issues and get them fit and teach them about how to handle life during that difficult time. And she called it Girls on the Run. And so the first year there were 13 girls in the group. And then the next year there were 26, and then there were 75, and now it's in 150 cities, and is really what she spends all of her time doing, in addition to speaking and writing. And I think Molly's a great example of what I want to help you guys with today, is how do you think about combining the things you just love to do naturally with people that you really care about helping. So that's tonight's subject. And just the logistics for the call, it's an interactive call, so even though I'm talking, feel free to jump in and ask questions. And I'm recording the call, so just use your first name and introduce yourself when you make a comment so we know who's talking. If you need to mute your phone, you can use *6, and then if you want to unmute it, just press *6 again. And then I will send out the link to the recording later on this week or early next week so that you can listen to it again if you don't feel like taking notes during the call. Okay, so tonight we got three big topics, and I did send around an outline. And we're going to talk about who you're meant to help, first of all. Then we're going to talk about the getting paid part, so how do you get paid to do that. And the third thing is, I want to talk a little bit about dealing with success, so some of the things that come along with that. And, you know, I assume that you're all going to be successful and you're going to work towards this. And so I think a lot of times we think about things that can go wrong, but we don't really think about some of the challenges when you really start to live a life that you want to live. So I want to share some things there so you're ready for it when those things start to happen. Okay, so well, let's start with the first topic. Who are you meant to help? And there's a story about that I read recently. It was about a guy whose name is Walter. And Walter grew up in Chicago. He was a city kid, but his parents had a farm out in the country, and they would go travel there every so often. And I think he spent the summers there. And when he was about 8, they were having his summer down at the farm, and one of the things he just loved to do was run out in the woods and kind of pretend like he would get lost, even though he wouldn't. And he really liked looking at the animals and the sense of nature and being out on his own and exploring. So one day he was on one of his walks, and he came upon an owl. And it was in the daytime, and of course owls are nocturnal, so the owl was sleeping. And he thought, wow, it would be cool to have an owl as a pet. So he started to sneak up on this owl, and as he got closer and closer to the owl, you know, he was afraid it would wake up and fly off, but it didn't. So he got right up on it, and he reached out and grabbed it. And right when he did, of course, the owl freaked out and woke up and scrambled off, and it was trying to kind of claw at Walter, trying to, you know, obviously trying to get away. And Walter kind of panicked, and he kind of beat the owl to death, and the owl died. And Walter was just crushed because he really loved animals, and he had only tried to get the owl because he wanted to play with it. He wanted it as a pet, and he thought it was really neat. But it really, really impacted him. And as a way to get over his guilt for having killed this animal, he started drawing. And one of the things that he really drew a lot was giving animals power to kind of live their lives and talk, because that he imagined. And who Walter turned into was Walt Disney. And that was really where his passion for the early movies like Bambi and those kind of films came from, was that this the thing that happened to him when he was a kid, that he grew up and he really wanted to atone for that, but also then share his joy of the outdoors and animals and how they live and how he can imagine interacting with them. So that's an example of somebody who found his way to help people through something that happened in his life that was really impactful for him. Then I have a friend, Annette, and when Annette was 60, her mom passed away, and they had been very close, you know, all through her life, and it was very, very difficult for her. And then 5 months later, her dad died, and she found herself really just completely unprepared to handle the grief. And it was just a part of the grieving process and trying to heal herself. She just started talking to her friends about what she'd gone through, and she talked about the idea of really becoming an orphan at age 60. And what she found out was that as she kind of talked through what she was going through and shared her experience with her friends, that they started to give her feedback that what she was saying was helping them. And she got the idea to start a blog called, and she called it Marina's Abundance, named for her mom, Marina. And she's now started a blog, and she posts these stories about what it's like to lose a parent. And really, it's more of a sense of her perspective is one of joy, of sharing the times that you've had together and the memories. So in addition to helping people who have lost parents, she encourages people to build the memories while their parents are still around. And she's just written a children's book to teach to them about saving memories. And so it's about how do you record things and write things down so that when your parents eventually do pass on, you've got this wonderful gift of things you can look back on to remember the things that were great about her. And so her story is so touching that she clearly had a remarkable relationship with her mom, and so she's been able to share that with the world. So those are two examples of how a couple of people, Molly with her own experience as a 15-year-old girl who kind of felt different than everybody else and felt a lot of pressure from them. You know, Walt Disney, who had had this accident happen that he really felt terrible about, that really wasn't anything about him, that spurred him on to do something that created a lot of joy for a lot of people. And Annette, who's finding ways to share the wonderful parts of her mom's life and the grief she's felt to make other people's experience better. The common theme among them is that they all came from a place of something that had happened in their lives where they felt kind of overwhelmed by what was happening to them, and that they didn't have the tools when they were going through this to cope with it. And so they had to just on their own make up ways to cope with them. You know, Molly ran, Walt Disney started to draw animals, and Annette started to tell stories about her life with her mom and the memories of them and other things. And what they found was that their work, while they were doing something that they loved to do, started to help other people. And I think for a lot of us who want to make a difference in the world and who have a lot of passion and a lot of creativity and a lot of energy and want to do something more than just earn money and deal with the kind of mundane aspects of life, it's really important for us to think about, spend some time thinking and to spend some time exploring who are those people who we are really, put here or meant to help through what we've went through in our own lives or people who are like us. And so what I wanted to do right now was do a little exercise with you all to help you start to think about who those people might be. And so there's two parts to it. First one we're going to talk about, the first part is exercise, and this is something I borrowed from Barbara Sher, who I really like. But the first part is what we call the orphan exercise. And so what I want you to do is just take about 5 minutes, and I want you to think back to a time, back to your childhood, and think about a time when you wanted to do something but you didn't know how to do it. So I don't know, might just think of an age, 8, 10, 12, however you are, and just think back to some time when there was something you really wanted but you didn't know how to do it, or something you wanted to do and when you asked for help it just was unhelpful, the responses you get weren't helpful. Or maybe a time when you wanted to do something but you didn't ask because you really didn't know how. So I want you to think for about 5 minutes on that. I'm going to give you a break, and then we'll come back and we'll do the second part of the exercise. So is that clear for everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll just mute the line, and I'll come back in about 5 minutes. Okay. Is everybody back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you guys, thinking about that?
It's kind of hard for me. This is Elizabeth, but then I started getting some ideas. So.
Okay. Anybody else have a similar experience?
I find it kind of hard. Well, on the scanner, so there were lots of things, but I was way too shy. I suppose I wanted not to be shy and how to know how to make sense, but I didn't know how to ask about that. That would be the key to everything else, really.
The first time I did this, I thought back to the time when I was probably 8 years old, and I remember this. There's this one day when I was at soccer practice, and I had to leave soccer practice early, so all the guys on my soccer team were messing with me about not being committed to soccer. And the reason I had to leave was because I had to go get on my bike and go to my piano lesson that day. And so they were like, why are you going to piano? You should like soccer better. So I'm feeling excluded there. And then I get to my bike and somebody's stolen my piano book or whatever that was with my bike. And so I had to go tell my piano teacher, who I didn't really like, that I'd lost my music for the day. And so we couldn't do what the thing was, and he had to do something else there. And I didn't really like the piano lessons anyway, and the soccer was okay, but it wasn't my favorite thing. And I just remember telling my mom, I was like, I don't have any time to do anything I want to do. And so part of where what I want to help people do is, find a way to make time to do the things that are really important to them and not be so influenced by the people around them, and find ways to appreciate what it is about them that's special. So that was my kind of experience with that. It was very interesting. So the second part of this exercise is to, if you think about a time when there was something you wanted to do and you couldn't do it. So now imagine yourself as you are now as an adult. And if you could go back and talk to yourself and give yourself advice, knowing what you know now, what would you say? So, if you could just totally come to the rescue as a superhero, what would you tell yourself when you were a kid? So let's take about maybe 3 minutes and do that, and then we'll come back. Okay, how was that? What was that like? Did you guys have enough time?
This is Elizabeth. I think I had enough time. I'm just drawing a blank.
Okay, all right. Annie, did you have any luck?
I would tell myself to ask for what I want and not take no for an answer always, because I realized I would always, if I was said no, if they just said no, or I assumed they would say no, I wouldn't ask again. Whereas when my brother was born 10 years later, he wouldn't take no for an answer. He'd persuade them. He'd keep on and he'd persuade them eventually to allow him to do it. And I didn't know I could do that. So I suppose that's what I would tell myself.
Right. Okay. Great.
I try to teach myself to have more confidence, but I don't know how you do that. The child that doesn't have it.
Yeah, I think the thing there is just to speak up even when you don't have confidence, or find ways to get support to do that. Because I'm not sure that changes. Another way that you can think about this is to think about who you like working with, or who do you just like, basically, and you can describe them by, as much detail as you can. Is it a woman or a man? What age are they? What do they do? Do they work in a company, or what's the setting they're in? And you can just sort of build out a profile of just who you're naturally kind of feel drawn towards. So, and I'll talk in a minute about some other ways that you can start to explore too for that. One of the ways that you can find out more about who you might be drawn to helping, or actually who might need your help, is kind of like what we talked about back towards the beginning of these classes when I talked about how to try on things you might like, those fun experiments. So you can do an experiment on helping people too. And You know, we talked about the kind of using your internal scale, fun scale to know how fun something was or how well it fit you. You can do a similar thing here. And you know, I just want to tell a little story from a trip I was on about somebody who I met who really cared about me and how that experience was. And I, as I told you, I used to travel a good bit around the world. And on one of my trips to Japan, I was in Tokyo, and we were staying at this checking in at this hotel called the Imperial Hotel, and it's known as it's the Grand Dam of Tokyo hotels. It's right across the street from the Imperial Palace grounds, which take up a big chunk, kind of like it's almost like Central Park in New York in Tokyo. It's a big green space, and you can from the upper floors you can look out over that and see the Emperor's Palace. And so it's this opulent hotel from back when they built big hotels. It's huge. And so we're checking into the hotel, and we were late. We had flown in from, I think, Korea or somewhere, and we were really tired, and we were coming in late to check in. And I go up, and the man at the desk was checking me in, and he was typing into his little computer, and I could tell something was bothering him. And he literally kind of started to sweat. He seemed so nervous about it. And then he asked me to excuse me for 1 minute, and he went back in the back and talked to somebody, and then he came back and checked it again, came back, and then he and I'm like, oh, great, have they lost my reservation? Am I going to have to go somewhere else? I mean, it was just going to be a huge hassle. I could just see all the problems that you run into sometimes. So then he comes around, and he says, Mr. Bacon, unfortunately, you asked for a king non-smoking room, and all we have is room with twin beds, non-smoking. And I'm like, no big deal. I don't care. That's fine. It's just me. But he just felt so bad about that, and he actually walked around the counter and just bowed deeply from his waist, and he said, no, I am so sorry. And this guy was just like pouring out his soul for me that he hadn't been able to serve me to the level that I expected. And to me, it was just an unbelievable level of graciousness on his part. And I didn't really care that much. It wasn't that big a deal. And that kind of thing happens all the time, right? But this guy, really, the Japanese culture is really based on service, but this guy in particular really, really cared about taking care of me and then making sure that my life was okay. And I could tell that it really got to him when he couldn't do that. And so it was clear to me that being a kind of a of service to other people was something that he was really part. It was really part of a core of him, more than just what his job was or the culture that he grew up in. And then we had breakfast the next morning. I was sitting with a colleague of mine, and he'd asked for, I think, wheat toast. And when the waiter talked to him, I think they just misunderstood each other. They were out of wheat toast. And so the waiter, when he came back out, brought white toast instead of wheat toast. And this guy, Mike, that I was with said, oh, no, I wanted wheat toast. And then the guy was so embarrassed, he actually went back. He just left right away. And Mike's just sitting there going, what's going on? He goes, I don't care that much. Just tell me what you have. And so then he comes back out, and the manager of the whole restaurant comes out, and just, again, same thing, apologizing that he couldn't make the wheat toast, that they're out. Even though it wasn't their fault, here he was trying to make amends. So those guys really got that sense of that they were there to make sure that our experience was really good. So I think that one of the things that you can look for when you are in a situation where you can provide assistance to somebody, even if it's a small thing that you're doing, is you can look for that sense in yourself of either something that you aren't able to do that really kind of affects you more than you think it ought to, like it was these guys, or somewhere where you really just get a kind of a warm feeling when you're able to help somebody, and it's more emotion than it should be for what you're doing. So that's the thing to look for. And then in order to go kind of try that out, given that you're looking for this sensation or this feeling when you do it, you can do an experiment. And if you want to have a visual for what the way I think about this is, do you remember those little games you used to have when you were a kid? They were like things for when you were on a long trip in a car. And what it was is it was like a piece of cardboard with a face printed on it of a man. And it had a little plastic bubble on it. And inside were these little metal shavings. And then it would have on a string attached to the side a little magnet. And what you did was you used the magnet to kind of move the shavings around to put a beard on the guy. Or he was bald, so you could put hair on him. And I think what happens when you're in a situation where you're around those people that you're meant to help is it's almost like that magnet attraction, to, you know, those little shavings are the people that you want to help, and they're just naturally drawn to you. So like when Annette started talking to her friends about what she had been through and her mom and how much her mom had meant to her, and it just naturally started to help people, and they started to tell her, you know, thank you, this is really helpful to me. And Annette was just, in her mind, she was just doing what she needed to do to get through, to get through, get over her grieving process, and it was helpful to her. So she had no intention in her head that what she was doing would help other people. But in spite of that lack of intention, it did. And she started getting the feedback, and that's how she knew, hey, these are people that I could really help. This is something that I could do. So you don't necessarily have to know right ahead. If you couldn't, you know, if the nothing came to mind when you're doing the little orphan exercise, don't worry about it. You don't have to know that. That's just one way to think about it. So, but what you can do is go out and volunteer. You know, if you have an opportunity to go, anything that just sounds kind of interesting to you, you can go spend a day reading to kids. You could, you know, like Scanny's do, Annie's doing, put up the website to help other scanners, people like us, which we all need to know each other. That's a great example of what you can do. And then, and you'll see, you'll start to get feedback. Oh, that was so great for me. I'm so glad you did that. And that's your clue that you're on the right track. So don't be afraid to try some things and have some work out and some not. That's all okay. It's all just part of learning. So that's the real world, you know, direct way to find out who you're helping. And the good news is when you're doing it, you actually get to help some people out along the way. So that's all good, and those all tend to come back to you. So those are a couple of ways that you can find yourself. And again, it's just like everything else. The most important thing is to start trying some things and to pay attention to how you feel. So do you guys have any questions or comments on that, the aspect of identifying a group of people that you feel drawn towards helping?
I'm good.
Okay. Let's move on.
I really enjoy, I really enjoy this networking. I thought I started it because I feel kind of isolated, and I don't know many other scanners, especially being in Europe. Most people don't even know what the word means, so I started it partly for myself, and I really enjoy doing it, making the connections and finding out about all the people. And in fact, it's a lot more fun than what I should be doing to earn money.
Okay. Well, but Annie, see, that's in a great way. You're really using your shyness. You're getting over your shyness by creating sites that build a community of people who meet you, you know? And so you're really using what your natural self to do this, which I think is great. So
I got over most of the shyness a while ago from playing music in the streets and things like that. So still there's always a little bit of it left. This is fun. I like doing it.
Yeah.
And, I don't know where it's going to end up, but I'm hoping to get some actual actions going, meetings and whatever, scanner camps or, I don't know, some real life things as well as the online.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's great. And I mean, it's a powerful bunch of people you could kind of unleash to do something too.
Yeah. So. How many different talents and interests are there between us all? Thousands,
Well, your comment was a great segue into the second part of the class tonight, and this is on how to get paid. And so, when you think about how you know you've got something you love doing and you're helping people who want to do it, but how on earth am I ever going to turn that into money or pay for my time or ultimately hopefully provide a living for you? Ideally, is what we'd like to have or I'd like to have for you. And so, you know, whereas I think when you are trying to find, you know, what your gift is to give to other people or who are the people are who naturally you're really put here to help. I think that is a real, really unique thing to you, and that sense of experimenting and trying things on and just seeing what works for you is a really powerful way and a really effective way to do that. So I think in contrast to that, when you want to think about how to make money, I actually think the best way to do that is to use models that already exist. So I don't think when you're thinking about yourself and you're going to help and everything else, I think that's it's hard to find other people who have just the set of who you are. And so that doesn't really work so well. But it works great for making money. So let's talk about that. And so when we talk about how to get paid for making a difference, there's two big pieces to that, and it's role models and business models. And so I'm going to talk about both of those now. Role models is, when I say role models, what I mean is really people who you look up to or you learn from. And there have been a lot of people in my life, and every day I meet somebody new who teaches me something. And so these people can be people that you look up to, or just people who are good at some particular thing you're not, or people you admire for their character or what they do. And just a few of the people in my life. One is when I was in graduate school, my advisor is he was a brilliant physicist. And but the thing I loved the most about him was that he was just so passionate about what he did. And he was a really nice guy, and he was, you know, he did what he needed to do his job. But for him, you know, sitting in with his son watching TV, he'd be working on proofs for some problem we were working on, or he'd be in the lab helping us build something. But it was just his whole sense of the way he lived his life and doing what he loved, and how he shared that with all of us who were studying under him, and just that enthusiasm was so infectious. And so I always think about John, and I kind of, when I think about that aspect of my life, he's somebody I look up to and use as kind of a touchstone for that. So with these role models, you can, you know, I think it is hard to model yourself after somebody else because you are so different. But what you can do is sort of build a dream team of different people. So, you know, John, I look up to his enthusiasm and his creativity. I've met other people like an author named Dave, who is just a really brilliant marketer and businessman. And he's very focused on what he does. He's done very well selling his books. And so, you know, I think when I think about what I need to do, I think about Dave, and I think, you know, what would Dave do when, if he wanted to sell this book, or how would he approach this, or even some, what are some of the tricks that he'd use when he sold his own books? So I have him. And then I have a friend in town named Gary, and Gary's a recruiter, and he works with people, and he's just excellent with helping identify the talent in people and helping understand what's interesting about people. And I love to talk with him and brainstorm, and he's really creative, and he's also just a kind of a good person who helps people. My minister at my church is really somebody who's really really lives his beliefs in both in the church and in his life, just the way he carries himself, and is a leader by leading by example. He's a model to me. So those are some of my personal kind of role models. And you know, if you were to ask me who do I want to be when I grow up, I'm like, well, I want to be me. You know, I'm already me. I just want to be the most of me and the best of me I can be. And I think that should be all of our goals. But that doesn't mean that we can't pick and choose from different people. So when you're starting to think about how to get paid in the context of getting paid, what you can do is think about what are you missing? You know, what are you not good at, or what's harder for you, or what don't you know about making money, or you know, starting a business, or even like working in a company or being better at what it is you do already. You know, you can start to build this team of people either in real life by meeting them, which will happen, or just by reading about them. You can just kind of have them in your head, and you can think about, you know, what would Dave do in this situation? What would he do? And then a lot of times what will happen is you'll end up meeting those people, and they'll end up helping you directly. But the process of thinking through kind of what do I need to know, or what don't I know, is a great starting point for starting to build this team of people who can help you. And then the other piece of getting paid is business models. And so like I was saying at the beginning, you know, there's nothing new about business models. You don't need to invent that. You don't have to make something that you don't have to create that from scratch. You can pick and choose from ones that already exist. And the way to think about this is, do you guys know what a Venn diagram is? Do you guys know what that is? It's mm-hmm. like when you have you draw a couple of circles or three circles that overlap a little bit. And so my kids learned it in school. It's like when they want to write a paper about, you know, my daughter was writing a they were about flying squirrels, and she had to compare them to some other kind of squirrel. And so the A circle was all these facts about flying squirrels, and the B circle was regular gray squirrels. And then, so there were some things different about them. You know, flying squirrels have flappy wings and they can float. Regular squirrels don't. But then there are some areas that overlap. They're both mammals and they both have fur, well, because they're mammals. But so you can kind of visualize these two overlapping circles. So when you're thinking about a business model, what you can do is think about, you know, what are different companies or people's businesses that exist today? So, like, you know, for my case, I might look to somebody who's an author or somebody who has a training business or somebody that's speaking and look at how does their business work. And I can even meet those people and ask them these questions. And I can talk about, you know, I can talk about how they price the business and how they build the business and how they structure the business and how does it work. You can look at examples of how that works. And then, you know, for example, when I worked doing sales and I traveled a lot, you know, I understood how that business worked. I needed to be on the road a lot. I needed to be face-to-face with people a lot, and I needed to travel a lot. So if I wrote down kind of how would that job work for me, you know, it would be key parts of that job were, you know, travel, being able to communicate effectively with people, being able to network, some of these things. And so if I put that in that circle, and then I look at kind of the other circle is how do you want to live your life or what's important to you? And on that side, things would have been like my family and spending time with my family. You know, engaging with people would have been there. So the people part would have overlapped. Networking probably would have overlapped. But the travel and the being at home ultimately for me were in conflict, and I couldn't close that gap. But now I have a different thing where I do consulting, and the consulting is some travel, which isn't all bad for me, but it's more work that I can do from wherever I am. So you can kind of piece out the little parts of different businesses, and you can explore as many as you want, and then look at what works for me and what's that overlap of where I can make money. And again, with this one, it's another one where it's not something that you have to do yourself. There are a lot of people, there are a lot of resources and people who can help you to understand them, and I would encourage you to go find role models, people who do it already, and don't reinvent the wheel. Find somebody who can tell you, find a forum or an online place to do that, who can teach you what you need to know to do that. So let me give you some examples of people who did that. And these are all people that I've interviewed over various time. And the first one is a guy named David. David's the author. And David realized that he really liked helping people who were kind of working people, teachers who wanted to know about personal finance, and Dave wanted to write a book. And so while Dave had been volunteering doing this and starting to understand what the needs of the market were and what did these what really were the messages that would get across to these teachers that he talked to, he learned all that and he knew about himself and he knew what he was good at. So what he did was he started reading a lot of books on writing books and on marketing books, and he told me that, you know, even though he's been phenomenally successful, you know, 90% of the ideas that he uses to market his books are things that he got from somebody else. So his way to do that was just to read a lot and to apply those to his own business, and then to meet other people who are speakers to teach him how do you go about getting new business. You know, what is effective when you speak? How much do you charge? You know, how do you do that? All those questions he found not by sitting in a room or doing something else. He just either read about him or he met somebody, and through that process he created this business that was made up of writing and speaking for him. Another person I've talked to is Edna, and she is a potter, and how she got into that was by taking some art classes, and she just naturally found herself drawn to doing this pottery, and so what she did was she continued to take these classes, but she also got to know her teachers in the class. And a lot of them were people who also were working artists who sold their work. And so through meeting some of them, she learned about, you know, not just the how do you make the art, which was kind of her gift and what she wanted to share, but the business aspects of that were what's the best way to go about selling that. And so they talked to her about, you know, art festivals that go on and how do you sign up for those? And then what are some good ones I could go to? And encourage her to go out and find these places where she could go sell her pottery. And through those interactions, as she started to do that, she would meet other people there. And they would give her ideas about how they marketed their business and how they did that. So that was how she did it. Then I have a friend, Ed, who I met, and he's the guy who started the home exchange business. And Ed knew about marketing. He was a businessman already, but he didn't know anything about this business. And so he did the same thing. He actually tried to start out by working with another company who already was in this business to do the marketing for them. And then when they couldn't do it, he just used he just focused on the things he knew, which was the marketing, and then he partnered with other companies who were already in the business to start to grow it up. And that's how he learned about how do you reach out to people and how do you build that business model. And ultimately now he's kind of an expert in that field after 15 years of doing it. And then Angelina, who's somebody else I met, she would find out about things by volunteering. And so she's made several job transitions, and one that she did was she was a New York City school teacher, and she had really liked working with the kids, and the teaching is something that she's carried through her whole life. What she found herself, though, was that she really didn't like the sort of politics of the school and the other things that went with being a teacher. And so she wanted to make a change, and so she kind of combined she found a way that she could volunteer with a nonprofit so that she could learn about how nonprofits worked. And she took a job with them doing, she was some kind of advocacy role where she helped them, but at the same time got to know the people who ran the nonprofit and got to experience some time with them. So that's another model for learning about business, is to be sort of an apprentice or a volunteer with a group where you can help out somebody who knows how these things work to do that. So that's helpful for you guys. Is that we're going to talk a lot more about making money next week too, but.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thanks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Annie, does that help you at all in what you're thinking about?
Yeah, it does to some extent. I'm kind of partway there already, so I'm not starting at the beginning with you all, because I have this, as I said, I'm building up this community, and then I have another plan to help people with their learning English. You were talking about being a consultant. That's what I want to learn about, how to be a consultant, how to be confident enough to say, I am a consultant, and you need to pay me consultant rates, and how do I decide what those rates are?
Right, right. Well, there are some, so I can tell you a little bit about that in particular. There's, one thing you can do is look at, you can look at what other people charge for that
mm-hmm.
service. And sometimes you can find it on the internet. Sometimes you can look up places who do that and either call them yourself or have a friend call them and ask how much they charge. And that's a good way to find out kind of what the market will pay for that service. So like if you wanted to do career coaching, for example, I think a lot of people, it's about $200 an hour is sort of the normal thing there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're just getting started and you're not maybe comfortable yet charging the full price of what the market will bear,
mm-hmm.
a great way to do it is to say, hey, you know, my rate is $200 an hour, but I'm going to give you a discount right now to you because I'm just getting my business. But I'd like to work with you. And you just find somebody who needs help and give them a break off your price, or don't tell them that, but then you feel better that you're not charging them more than you think you're worth, but at the same time, you're kind of setting an expectation that later on, you're going to be charging $200 an hour, so you're getting a break right now. So I think the most important thing to build your confidence is really just doing the work, and then knowing that there are ways to not pay, not to charge the full amount, more than you think you can right now. But you don't want to undercut yourself either, because you know you're going to get better faster, and then you need to get fairly compensated for what you're going to do. So it's part of set expectation and then be realistic about what you can charge together. Is that helpful?
Yes, I guess it is. Mm-hmm.
And I guess the other thing I would say too is that a lot of people have started blogs and things, and they start a blog and then they have trouble figuring out later on how to make money from the blog, you know. And
mm-hmm.
and And one of the things there is that's kind of what I'm talking about when I say that you don't have to invent a new way to make money.
Yeah.
There's a website that's called like ProBlogger.com
yeah.
or .net is a good site about the business of running blogs. And you know, there's basically just a few ways that blogs make money. You know, one way is they have like the New York Times has a website, and tons of people come there because they have the news, they have that content, and so basically they sell ads and they make money off of ad revenue. It's the model that magazines and newspapers have used forever. So that's one way if you have a lot of traffic. The other way people use blogs is a way to build awareness of things that they do, like consulting offline, and so they use a blog to build a connection with potential customers so people know them and they're give them a taste of what they do. And so it's more of a marketing vehicle than a way to make money. So that's one way. That's almost like working at, you know, the ice cream place and giving a free taste scoop or something, you know. So anything, in spite of what everybody says about it, it's a whole new world and about the internet and everything else, the core business ideas are really, there's nothing new under the sun. It's always something that's been there before. So what you have to do is think about, you know, what am I, and you know, what are ways I can do it? Could I be a traffic site, you know, or an advertising site? What would it take to do that? Or do I want to offer a service, and then what would that look like? Or do I want to, you know, sell products through my website, like Amazon or something, or Etsy, or if you want to do crafts and sell them online. So you know, there's an analog to whatever you want to do in the real world if you want to do something online. And it's just a matter of asking the question, I think, of yourself, you know, what is this business going to be like? And then you think through, okay, if it is a content site, then I'm going to be mostly doing marketing, drive a lot of traffic. And what does that entail? Then you can ask the question, you know, how do you drive traffic? And you can read about that. And that starts to fill out that one circle I was talking about the business side. You start to learn what it would take to run an effective business like that. And you can see how much of that overlaps with what I'm good at. And then even if it's parts of it you don't like, you think about, can I help somebody help me with that part of it so I don't have to maybe be the one to do the part I don't like. If you don't like being in front of people, you could hire somebody to do that or partner. There are ways to get around it. But you can just start to think about, what service am I offering? You know, who is my customer? And then what are they willing to pay? And usually those answers are out there somewhere. And it's just a matter of thinking about that and thinking about yourself and looking for an overlap. Does that help?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been thinking about membership sites. There's been a lot of talk about mm-hmm. those recently. Do you have any experience with those?
Yeah, a good person on that is the guy who runs this website called Copy Blogger.
Yeah,
He's done a lot with those. And again, if you think about the business of that, that's kind of like a magazine model. So people pay a subscription, and you need to keep generating content to keep them from canceling their subscription.
Mm-hmm.
So you think about how many people will come. Do you need to have come to sign up? You know, and you can figure out, okay, if 100 people come to my website and 5% of them sign up, and then they stay for 3 months on average, you can kind of build a little math equation for how much money you can make and how much you need to charge to make it into a business for you. And it's a way to start thinking about, what am I going to need to do to make this successful? What's it going to take? And then you can make a choice of whether that works for you or not. But I mean, I made this, not it was a mistake, but I mean, I've been down this road myself too, where I thought, oh, you know, I really like to do this thing. Let me just start doing it and see if there's a business there. And just because I like doing something doesn't mean that it's something that people will pay for. So don't try. You don't have to invent the business side. You can just pick and choose, and then again try to find the part of it you like and with the part that works with a business model for you. I think that's it's like working a jigsaw puzzle or something. You're just looking for the pieces to put together.
Yeah. Yes, that's it. Finding out what people will pay for us, was that's the key to it all.
Yeah, yeah. And I think and there are ways you can experiment with that too. You can do tests with people to see whether they'll buy it and that kind of thing. And another good resource actually is this this thing called the 30-day challenge. Do you know about that? You can I'll send it to you. There's a guy named Ed Dale, and it's going on right now. And he teaches how to build. He does internet marketing, so I don't totally agree with what he does. But he has a lot of tools about how you can test out different ideas on the internet if that's where you want to do your business.
Is that free? Is it the ones I can't afford to pay for me?
Yeah, it's free. It's free. It's all free. So I'll send that to you. It's really it's good way. It's kind of fun anyway, just to learn about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So on the business side, I think the key is just finding out the, getting the information about other businesses like that. You know, I think that's the way to go there. And if you guys are interested, shoot me an email and I can probably put together more resources on that too. Now that y'all are asking good questions.
Oh, that's right. Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk. If you don't have any more questions about that, let me just talk a little bit about, you know, how do you, if you found some people you want to help and you've started to volunteer with them and maybe you've kind of got some business ideas about how that might work, you know, how do you start the process of growing that or starting to see how that could be your full livelihood? And a good metaphor for that is like going across a bridge, and I have this really pretty picture of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco on a foggy morning, and it almost looks like it's in the clouds. So, you know, you can see parts of the road, and you can see the beginning of the road going across the bridge, but you can't really see the whole thing. And I think a lot of times when you get into this, you don't have to know everything first. You kind of know that you're on a path, and there's some clouds that you can't see, but you know that you can learn what you need to learn along the way. And so it's a process of just starting with something, and then because a lot of times until you start, you don't really know what you don't know, and as you move further along, you'll learn more and more that you don't know. So keep that image in mind as you think about starting to do some of this work. Okay, so the last thing I wanted to talk about tonight is dealing with success, and maybe that seems far off to you now, or maybe you're experiencing it now. But one of the things that I've just learned really over the last year of meeting some of these people who are doing really well is that you really, even if you're successful, you don't ever really feel any different than you do now. And I'm going to read a quote from Walt Disney. He said, "As far as I can see," he replied, grinning, "being a celebrity has never helped me make a better picture or a good shot in a polo game or command the obedience of my daughter or impress my wife. It doesn't even seem to help keep the fleas off our dogs. And if being a celebrity won't even give you an advantage over a couple of fleas, then I guess there can't be much in being a celebrity after all."
Mm-hmm.
And what it means is, I mean, you are who you are and you're going to be who you are. But you can make a much bigger impact on the world. And I think what happens is other people start to react to you differently. It's not so much that you are a different person. It's more that you are just aligning yourself with what you're really naturally good at and with people who really need the help that you're giving them. But one of the things that can start to happen when you start to take off and really find your place in the world is that you can stir up a lot of things with the relationships, the people who are really close to you. And so, you know, with your spouse, your significant other, it can change that dynamic. And there can be some fear that comes along with that you're going to change and maybe leave them behind or maybe the relationship will change or it might change what you do for work and that might change your family's lifestyle. Those are all questions that have come up in my life. And so that's one thing to be aware of and to think about early on. And communication is really important with that of being willing to talk about that and bring that issue up and know that issue will come. And then the other thing that can happen, and this is something that can be really this happened to me that was kind of painful, was that when you have relationships with people who have been mentors to you in the past or people who have helped you with whatever it was you were doing before, so in my case, working at companies and being in management and that kind of thing, when you start to discover what you really want to do and you really get excited about a new direction and you move off and start to grow, sometimes you can kind of, you kind of pass these people who you looked up to all your life. And in some ways, I think it's like being a kid when you look up to your parents and you think grown-ups are different, and then all of a sudden you become a grown-up and you realize that they're not any different than anybody else. And you get, I remember there was a point in my life in my 20s when I realized that, you know, I wasn't a peer with my mom, but we could talk as adults now, and it was a different kind of relationship. And I think that happens, too, sometimes in relationships you've built in your career when you start to head off in a different direction and find yourself with some success and some traction in what you're doing. And the reason I tell you about that is not is mostly to make you aware that it'll happen, because one of the things that can happen to you and is that you can start to feel like you're doing something wrong, or there's something wrong about what you're doing now, or you can start to second guess yourself. And that's common. You're going to have that anyway. Just whenever you make a change, there's going to be a natural resistance to doing something different inside of you. But when you have people that you've respected and looked up to, it can be really, it can mess with your mind a little bit. And so, you know, important thing to remember there is just to, you know, take the time to pause and ask yourself, why are you doing what you're doing? You know, kind of go back through all you've been through and how much meaning you're getting out of this and where you're headed, so that you can kind of keep that in perspective. And then the other thing is to really build on the new group of people that you're building, your new tribe of people who really are supporting you in your new area or what you love, and talk to them about it and get help about it. I mean, these are things that are sometimes hard to deal with by yourself when you're trying to do so much, you're trying to change and things are going well, but here are these people who I thought really cared about me who are now questioning me. You know, that can be a real disorienting experience. So those are two things to just kind of watch out for and get help with. But and then remember that you're always going to be you. You don't become a different person, but all of a sudden people can think about you in a different way. Really strange experience. So what questions do you guys have on any of the stuff we've covered tonight?
This is Elizabeth. I don't really have any questions right now.
Okay.
Very good. It was all really great information. Thank you.
I will. I'm going to think about the business model stuff a little bit more, and I'll send you some more thoughts on that. And what we're going to talk about next week is about making the move. And so it's how do you know, you know, how and when to make your calling your real livelihood. And the story I tell about that is when I was a kid, my dad was a minister. And there was a period of time when he was working for a seminary, and on the weekends he would be a temporary preacher at different churches. So he would get up on Sundays and drive somewhere, preach, and then come home. And on one trip, we lived in Georgia, and we were going to Alabama, and he took me with him. And, you know, we were riding along, and I was talking to my dad, and as we drove down the road, at one point he told me that we were in Alabama now, and I was so confused. I was like, well, how do you know? And he said, well, we crossed the state line. And I said, well, I didn't see any lines, because I was expecting, like, you look at a map and there are these really clear dotted lines when you cross over from one state to the next. And I think sometimes in our life, when we're talking about making a change, or especially something of the magnitude of what's related to our careers and how we make money and who we are and all those kind of things, you know, we're really looking for some signposts or some, you know, at least a entering Alabama sign that we can tap into. And so next week we're really going to talk about how do you test that, and how do you know when it's okay to let go of where you've been and start to move into somewhere new. And I'll work in a lot more too about the income side of how you do that and how different people have kind of bridged that gap to make money while you build up something new that you really care about. So that's for next week.